cycle.
Holy crap, Janet.
Janet Prozewitz for Supreme Court.
Damn it, Janet, I love you.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Will our serious leaders please stand up? Please? Pretty please? Not to start off August 1st with a bunch of doom and gloom, but I read this from Axios this morning about our global existential threats that require real leadership and problem solving to tackle. And I just thought we'd start today with a plea to have serious people take this seriously. And you know what? If you have ideas on who you think is a serious leader who is actually tackling some of these existential threats, let us know. 844-967-2789. But when we put aside, because these are three things that honestly, they're not about politics. They're happening with or without Democrats in power or Republicans in power.
Or independents.
Or independents. And right now, all three of them seem to just be getting worse, and we don't necessarily have a great plan to improve it. So if you put your politics aside and look at the world clinically, you'll see that there's three areas that many experts are considering to be getting worse and visibly worse in 2023. That is rising temperatures, nuclear catastrophe, and AI capabilities.
All right. Happy Tuesday.
And so, you know, this is, we need people in government, not just the U.S. government, but globally. We need big companies to solve these problems at a faster rate than they are. So let's just talk about climate first, because we've just lived through the hottest month ever recorded on Earth. July was the hottest month ever, ever recorded on Earth. And the world's oceans are absurdly warm, with temperatures in the 90s.
Killing off coral.
Around Florida, bleaching and even killing coral.
That's really bad, folks.
The Antarctic Sea, sea ice is plummeting even in the dead of winter. Wildfires are raging. Climate scientists don't relish in saying, I told you so, but they've been warning for years that each seemingly incremental rise in global average temperatures would translate into severe heat waves, droughts, floods, and stronger hurricanes. And I know in Wisconsin this week it's been like perfect weather, but try going other places in the States. And also, we are still in a drought.
Yes.
So don't like ask the farmers how they're feeling about our perfect weather right now. And the worst part is we can't even say that this is our new normal because it's going to get worse. And so this is, you know, at the same time that the two big countries that release the most emissions and like are causing the most carbon to be released is US and China, which we're not in like the best terms with you with China right now.
Not
and
exactly.
So, you know, trying to get a commitment to slow down our economies or anything that could actually curb this while we're at odds with China, probably not very likely. Speaking of China and nuclear nukes, as we, you know, talk later today about Oppenheimer and Wisconsin's Marie Curie, we're going to have a guest on later to talk about a Wisconsin-born physicist who worked on the Manhattan Project, who is a little bit of a, who became a little bit of a hidden figure. But before that, that comes at 11:30 right now. You know, China has expanded its nuclear arsenal. And, you know, so now there's three rather than two nuclear superpowers, us, Russia, and China. And Russia, the Russia, you know, Vladimir Putin this summer has moved some of his countries, roughly 5,000 of them, arrive 5,000 nuclear weapons to Belarus, which is closer to Ukraine and Western Europe. And so, and then finally with AI, like even the people who are making the AI don't actually know how it works. And so there is...
That's really comforting.
And so, you know, there is now the ability to mass produce fake videos and sound bites and images, which is already dismantling what was already a very weak confidence level, in at least for Americans, in a lot of our elections and institutions. And so, in reality, like, humanity has pulled, like, we have a decent track record of pulling, like, not ending ourselves, right? But, like, we need serious people, and this is how the article ends, and I'm kind of paraphrasing a lot of things that it says because I agree with it so much, but it takes, like, this is serious work needs to be done by serious people to solve these types of problems. And then you pan over to DC and you're like, again, will our serious leaders please stand up? Because the House, let's just run down what's been happening at the House, which we've talked about a little bit on Friday, a little bit yesterday. But, you know, the House has finally gotten their much needed time out and gone on their August recess.
Yeah, they need a vacation.
Well, it's not even that they need they need a vacation because they're about to, it seems seemingly like they're going to rip each other's heads off.
Oh, that would be terrible.
So, you know, in just the last, month, we have Derek Van Orden, you know, being slammed by members of both sides of the aisle because of him screaming at teenagers.
Nothing will happen.
We have Nancy Mace, who was randomly talking about her sex life at a prayer breakfast.
Can we just take a listen to this
sure.
clip real quick?
And when I woke up this morning at 7, I was getting picked up at 7:45. Patrick, my fiance, tried to pull me by my waist over this morning in bed. And I was like, no, baby, we don't got time for that this morning. I got to get to the prayer breakfast and I got to be on time. And a little TMI, but he can wait. I'll see him later tonight.
Sex before marriage?
What? And also, that's something like I would say on this show. And it's like, it's still TMI, but at least it's like warranted because you're like, you're not an elected official speaking at a prayer breakfast.
To a bunch of evangelicals.
And so you got Nancy Mace talking about her sex life. You have Speaker McCarthy and Eric Swalwell almost going to like hit each other and calling each other derogatory female anatomy terms.
That's what you are. What am I?
Good Pee Wee Herman reference. And then you got Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert calling each other little bees.
The third graders.
And then you have also Taylor Greene basically showing naked, like nudes of Hunter Biden. And
in chambers.
In chambers. And that's just in the House. Then meanwhile, we also have Mitch McConnell and Dianne Feinstein. Many people saying like, are they okay? Can they serve right now? And the way in the lead front runner for the Republican presidential nominee, former President Trump, has what now four? Are we up to four? Is it officially four now indictments?
I believe it's officially four.
So again, I am asking, will our serious leaders please stand up? And I guess my question is, who do you trust to actually solve these big problems? And also, do we have the political will as voters and constituents to separate the frivolous from the serious in what we are getting riled up over?
But I think the frivolous that is mainly promoted by one side, that's intentional. The frivolous is inserted into serious things to distract people from the serious things.
Maybe. But there's still personal responsibility in falling for it.
Yeah, but more and more people now are avoiding the news. More and more people are checking out. They don't want to know. Stick your fingers in your ears. La, la, la. It's all going to be fine. Yeah, guys, not going to be fine.
So do you think that there's any serious leaders who can actually tackle this?
It's so much easier to list off all the doofuses because there are so many.
And they get the most attention.
But, I mean, I believe Mark Pocan is a serious lawmaker.
Okay.
I think, gee, again, the crazies suck up so much oxygen, it's hard to identify who actually has working brain cells.
But I also wonder on the private sector side, and I don't pretend to be an expert in geopolitics to know the gamut of world leaders of other countries and governments that are making serious strides on some of these issues, or the intentions behind CEOs and the big companies that, you know, make the global economy run. But it is so much bigger than just the people who are elected to, you know, the House or even the Senate. And
well, it's like Tom from LA always says, we the people, we are the government.
We are. And I just...
And it's incumbent on us to be involved, no matter how depressing, upsetting. I don't care. You got to be involved. You have to.
You have to.
Or don't complain.
Well, who's going to enforce that rule?
I'll do it.
All right. Well, sorry to have started this on such a downer moment. We'll have a way, way more fun.
We got a jam-packed show, too.
We have a jam-packed show. We are going to come back and talk a little bit about Pee Wee Herman and maybe a little bit about the soccer game. But then at 10:30, we got Dan Schaefer to recompopulate on some Wisconsin news. And then we got a new show coming starting on Thursday on Civic Media and WGBW and WISS Air Support. And then, like I said, we're going to talk to a Lawrence physics professor about a woman that she is researching that was the Marie Curie of Wisconsin.
Last break. State Fair tickets.
We're going to give State Fair tickets away at the end of the show. So jam-packed show. Stay tuned. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Madnair. And yesterday, I think the news broke basically right after we were done on air. Paul Reubens, a.k.a. Pee Wee Herman, died from cancer at the age of 70. And, I mean, I had not thought of that man in a very long time, but I certainly... Pee Wee's Big Adventure came out the year before I was born, but I remember being a little kid and certainly watching... Pee Wee's Playhouse.
Oh, it was huge.
It was huge. And, you know, it's interesting. So last night, Mike got home and he was like, we were making dinner. And he's like, do you want to watch Pee Wee's Big Adventure tonight? I was like, sure.
Why not?
And, oh my gosh, that movie is so weird.
So is Pee Wee's Playhouse.
And it's something that I'm like, God, I wonder if this would ever get made now. Maybe as like a cartoon character in an animated series or an animated movie, but as like a fully grown actor, I just wonder for how kooky that movie was. And it was fun. Like, you know, I did ask Mike at the end, I was like, is it as good as you remember? He goes, no, but I'm still happy we watched it. But I went down kind of a deep dive. I was like, so how did this even happen? And it turns out, He was an improv actor.
Paul Reubens.
And so he was in the 70s. He joined the Groundlings, which is, you know, similar to Second City or the improv. And you know, it's a sketch comedy improv, both you can take classes, but there's also performances. And then depending on which city you're in, you know, Second City is really big in Chicago. Groundlings is really big in LA. And so he was really good friends with Phil Hartman, RIP.
Didn't know that.
And it was Pee-wee Herman was this character that he fleshed out, that he just created. And because he was, I guess he was never, Paul Rubens himself was never good at stand-up. Like he couldn't remember punchlines and stuff. And
that's
so,
a problem.
Yeah. And so he created this like sketch character that was, you know, kind of like a grown, you know, a Peter Pan type character. And the original stage versions of it was much more geared towards adults. And I guess there was a lot more innuendos and stuff. And so as that character and that stage show gained popularity and there became the pitch to like have it be a movie, that's when it's turned into being targeted more towards kids. And the show then obviously towards more towards kids. But it's so funny to think about. It's just like as going back and watching it as an adult and realizing like, God, this was so weird, but it's also really innovative and funny and kooky and all the props and all the stuff in his house and
cherry and all the,
but also his performance and how much control he had over his voice and that laugh and like the range of his just like his speaking, like his like speaking voice, you know, and it's kind of sad because, you know, he apologized to his fans because he basically has been fighting cancer for years and was just doing it very, very privately. And like his like final kind of message was an apology, which I find very sad.
Oh,
but were you ever? Did you watch it, or you just?
I didn't.
Yeah, because you didn't have kids, and so
right.
Like
there was no reason for me to go there. Although I can remember very specifically friends of mine, and I don't know how old I was, late 20s, early 30s, who loved it, who just said, "Oh, you're missing out."
Really?
It's the wackiest, and. It just never called to me. Here's a little clip from Pee-wee Herman.
Why don't you take a picture? It'll last longer.
So little taglines like that, you know, everybody was throwing
around. I know I am, but what are you?
Yeah, exactly. I know.
No,
yeah,
I know you are, but what am I?
Exactly. Not a bad voice.
Thanks.
Kristen Bright. But he certainly wasn't dumb. He certainly was indelible, you know, and made a huge footprint.
Yeah,
he really
absolutely.
Did.
Absolutely. So,
rest in peace.
Rest in peace, Paul Rubens. And you know, obviously, I know that there was a little bit of a time where
he got in some trouble.
But it was interesting watching the outpouring of love. I think from you know Natasha Lyonne, the actress.
Yeah.
She tweeted out last night. She that was her first big break. She was on Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Seriously.
As a little kid. And so she posted some of the pictures of her on that show.
Oh, wow.
And she said, like, thank you for, like, getting my career started.
Natasha Lyonne, in case you don't know, was a big character in Orange is the New Black.
Orange is the New Black, Russian Doll,
yes,
which was
Russian
a great
Doll, which was,
show.
Yes, it was wonderful.
She has a very raspy voice. If you saw, she was in American Pie. She's had a very long career. Big hair, raspy voice. Sounds like, yeah. I actually think she did stop smoking, and so her voice has changed a little bit.
Oh, wow.
I remember seeing a video about that. But yeah, so that was what we did last night. And then very early in the morning, I woke up to hear Mike in the other room go, oh, he had woken up to watch the second half of the women's soccer game.
Which was like at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Which it started at 2 o'clock in the morning, so this was at like 3, and I woke up and watched the last 6 minutes of the game with him, and that noise he made was because we damn near lost.
Yes.
Portugal hit the post in overtime, not overtime, but in extended time, and did not score, so it was a draw, which means we move on to beyond group play.
By the skin of our teeth.
So it was a draw 0-0. And so now we are second place in Group E. The Netherlands came out on top and because they beat Vietnam 7-0. So now we will play the winner of Group G, which most likely will be Sweden, on Sunday at 5 a.m. Eastern. So it's a little bit more, I guess, doable than 2 a.m. on a Tuesday night.
Yeah, or Tuesday morning.
But yeah, so keep watching the Women's World Cup. It's fun. It's really good soccer.
Go USA.
Go USA. And we're going to take another break. And when we come back, we're going to recombobulate with the one and only Dan Schaefer. Stick around. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere. And that music can only mean it's time to recombobulate with the founder and editor and publisher of the Recombobulation Area, Dan Schaefer. Does that music now just make you happy every time you come on this show?
It really does. It really does. I'm really enjoying it. I have my own like walk up to the plate music here on As Goes Wisconsin.
It's great.
Couldn't be happier. I have that. I have the guys at Town Call made something for me too. So I'm very excited to have like all of this entrance music.
What is your entrance music on Town Call?
They put a little edit together that involves like a Bobby Portis quote and some other stuff.
Nice.
Whatever.
So, nice. And yeah, so you do that, you do Town Call at 12:15 on Wednesdays.
12:30 on Wednesdays.
12:30 on Wednesdays. Okay. And you get more callers on that one?
Yeah.
Nice. All right. You ready to get started?
Yeah, let's do it.
So we're still going to talk about kind of fallout from county sales tax vote from last week. Would like to get to the big news, certainly, that is today of Janet Protasiewicz, Judge Janet becoming Justice Janet today. But you texted me on my drive in this morning that there is some Senate news. So would you like to break that?
Yeah, that's right. There is some news in the race to challenge Tammy Baldwin in the race for U.S. Senate. Wisconsin Congressman Tom Tiffany announced today that he will not be running for U.S. Senate, and he will be running for re-election in the 7th Congressional District.
Very safe.
There's been speculation
very safe move.
Very safe move. A very red district in Wisconsin, you know, for the time being at least. And I think this is a really interesting move and timing for the move, because I think the writing was on the wall a couple weeks ago when there was a report out for kind of the campaign finance reports mm-hmm. came through for Tom Tiffany. And, you know, I think there's all this speculation that he would be running in this race, but those campaign finance reports came out. And he was out fundraised by every single member of Congress in Wisconsin. And so I'm going to read from the Wispolitics stock report, political stock report, after those numbers came out. And they of course, said Tom Tiffany was a falling stock. So they said, I'm quoting here, insiders saw the Monaco Republicans' second quarter fundraising as an opportunity to prove he's serious about running for U.S. Senate next year. He didn't deliver. So,
did not
deliver. So I think once that report came out, the writing was going to be on the wall that he was not going to be running. So
who does that leave? Because I in my infinite wisdom, of which is not many or is not much, let's just be honest. But like when I compare this cycle so far to where we were with Democrats in the race to run against Ron Johnson. At this point in 2021, it was a very, very full race. I think basically, was it August even when Mandela finally announced? And it was finally like all of the candidates had been running. So to me, this feels late to have no candidate on the like that's announced for Republicans to run against Tammy. But I could be wrong.
It does seem late, especially okay. if when you look around the country and there are all these, you know, competitive races that people are making announcements for. People are looking ahead to the 2024 map, what it's going to mean in Ohio, what it's going to mean in, you know, Montana, a number of these states that are going to have some closely watched races. And Wisconsin, as always, is going to be on the list
of
closely watched races. And if you look at, you know, any statewide election from a year out, you would have to project Wisconsin as a toss-up, just based on how close our elections are here, and just how closely contested everything is going to be in every big election cycle. Right now, I think you have to consider Baldwin as the clear favorite.
Yeah, because there's no one running against her.
There's no one running against her, for one. But also, even if somebody does run against her, the list is not exactly an inspiring one. You have, you know, former Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark, who's as Trumpy and far right and extremist as it gets. And he resigned in disgrace in Milwaukee before he
under what circumstances he resigned.
There was a lot of, I mean, he refused to answer questions about a death at the county jail.
Got it.
Yeah.
I have another question about David Clark. How long do you get to use a former title? Cause he's not sheriff anymore. So, I mean, is this just, he's going to be Sheriff David Clark for the rest of his life? That I'm bringing back that I was on homecoming court when I was a freshman in high school.
Were you?
Yes.
Nice.
Jane Matinere, former homecoming court
Jester.
In Hartford High School. I just think that's ridiculous. Side note. Sorry.
I think you get to use the title forever. I think that's how you should introduce yourself,
okay,
Jane.
Okay. I will.
I'm going to do that tomorrow.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's David Clark. Who else is potential? I think who else has like been thrown out that there's actually any indication that they could run?
So Madison businessman Eric Hovde has talked about a run. He was a candidate more than a decade ago. The first time that Baldwin was on the ballot, he was he lost to Tommy Thompson in the Republican primary in 2012.
Okay,
and then there is Scott Meyer, who is a CEO of a staffing agency called QPS Employment. He has talked about potentially running, but there was a story not long ago about how, you know, I think Dan Bice quoted him as saying, if no one else is going to do it, I'll jump in. So not exactly the inspiring message to really rally the troops. And so I think this is just indicative of Wisconsin Republicans having a really thin bench.
Yeah.
And not having anybody who is willing to take on a very successful incumbent in Tammy Baldwin.
Can't they find some other rich carpetbagger who doesn't actually live in Wisconsin to move here?
Well, I think that's kind of what they're getting at with Hovde, because I think Hovde has spent, you know, a lot of time in California in recent years since his last run over a decade ago. So, you know, another carpetbagger. Maybe they'll bring Tim Michaels back. Maybe they could try Dan Kelly again. You know, it's third time's a charm for statewide election for Dan Kelly.
And what's interesting is the only name that I feel like comes with some name recognition, but also baggage is David Clark, I think.
Yeah.
And so yeah, it's just, but that's Marquette, what it just gets back to the fact that like to have people run who have so little name recognition and have them announce seemingly late does not inspire a lot of confidence as far as how the campaign's going to go, in my opinion.
Yeah, I wrote a little bit about that name recognition factor when I broke down the latest Marquette poll, because that was the first time that they polled in this race, you know, it's kind of starting their 2024 polling cycle. And David Clark was way ahead of everybody in name recognition, but that was really on the strength of the Milwaukee area. In Milwaukee suburbs, yeah. Milwaukee city and county. He obviously had very strong name recognition. He was the sheriff in Milwaukee County for 15 years. So he had a very strong name recognition there, but he just had basically the same level of terrible name recognition as Tiffany and Gallagher and, you know, the other candidates that they polled in that in Green Bay and North and West Wisconsin. Sheriff Clark is basically unknown,
yeah,
as well.
Exactly.
So,
all right. Well, we will continue to watch that, because someone's got to run. They're not going to not run someone. So we will see where that ends up falling. But Tom Tiffany,
are there any surprise candidates that you would be watching? Like, do you think Rebecca Clayfish would jump into this race at all?
Do you think she wants to be senator?
I think she wants to run for a statewide office, but you know, the governor, I mean, obviously the governor's race made sense, but
maybe,
you know, it just seems like a really difficult task to go up against Baldwin.
It is. And I also, I don't know. And I don't know her. I've never met her. I've met Joel. Very fun. Yeah. We had a great time with Joel. But I don't know. It's hard. I just still feel like she got so burned by her party that I just wonder if it's still too soon to just get back on the horse. But like I said, I've never met that woman, and I don't know what her perseverance is of how badly, when you want something so badly, what you're able to justify and rationalize and get over. So I would say there's not a non-zero chance, but I don't know.
But what record would she run on? Foxconn?
I mean, what did she run on for governor? Probably the same thing,
I guess.
Yeah, 2 terms as lieutenant governor, you know,
I just remember her warning about people will be marrying coffee tables once gay marriage is allowed. So I'd like her to run just so I can ask her how many of those weddings she's been to.
Jane's on fire this morning. All right, well, let's move on because you also texted. So we talked a little bit about this on Friday when Maggie Dawn was here, since she was actually at the vote. But on Friday, there was the vote finally for the county sales tax that passed, overwhelmingly passed, I think more than even on Thursday. Or no, was it Thursday that the vote? No, the vote was Thursday. We talked to Maggie on Friday. And no, the vote was Wednesday. No, what am I?
Vote was Thursday. Yeah.
We talked to Maggie on Friday. And I interviewed David Crowley on Wednesday. There we go.
Right.
When they did not know if they had the numbers. And so to see them have 15 when they needed 12 was, I think people would say that was an overwhelming vote. But you said that there's been some fallout since then.
Well, I just think it's been some of the reaction to it, I think, has been interesting. So I think, you know, basically, I think the lack of reaction from Republicans and a mostly negative reaction from conservative media to the decision by the Milwaukee County Board to raise the sales tax has been very interesting, because basically you had this situation where Milwaukee needed to do something to address its revenue. The state Republicans gave the city and county one option. You needed the permission. They gave them this one narrow option to raise the sales tax to address some of these revenue issues that came from defunding the city and county through years of state level austerity. And, you know, Republicans basically, yeah, I would think in a normal state, we would have a situation where Republicans would say, congratulations, Milwaukee leaders, you've made the smart, responsible decision to put your city and county on a path to fiscal health. You know, the state was a partner in getting this together. You know, we're all going to be in a more prosperous, stable condition going forward. Instead, I think you had a lot of Republicans saying, well, Milwaukee voted to raise its sales tax. It's just classic tax and spend liberals, blah, 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 blah. But, well, this is the only option we had. And we had to, and I think, I part of me thinks that Republicans in the state wanted Milwaukee to vote this down so they could point at Milwaukee and say, they are who we thought they were. They're not responsible. They're going to make the bad decision every time. And that's not what happened. Mm-hmm. And I think people want, you know, Republicans in the state so often want Milwaukee to be the punching bag for so many of the scapegoat for so many of these different things. I think they wanted Milwaukee to fail. I think they wanted Milwaukee to vote this down. I think they wanted Milwaukee to fail so they could point at Milwaukee and say something. But their complete silence when Milwaukee did make the smart, responsible decision with the only tool that the state had granted them, you know, the silence from state Republicans did speak volumes to me, at least, considering how key this was to the, you know, the negotiations for this shared revenue deal that we talked about for months and months and months going into this.
That's an interesting observation. As far as, and I, obviously you've been writing about this for like 4 years, so you were picking up on things that I may have missed. Because when you said that to me this morning, you're like, the fallout, I was like, well, what do you mean? I didn't really see anything. And you're right, I didn't see anything. And right. So that's the exactly what fallout. It was, the lack of commentary, you know, versus every, you know, the amount of people that I've been, you know, a lot of the Republicans who could take to Twitter a lot, or X, or whatever. But very interesting. All right, well, when we come back, it's a big day. I don't know if they're streaming it live, but Judge Janet becomes Justice Janet. Later today, she is getting inaugurated. And for the first time in 15 years, the Wisconsin Supreme Court will have a liberal majority. And so we'll talk a little bit more about what that could mean and what the future holds with Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area. Stick around. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere, and we are recombobulating with Dan Schaefer on this first day of August, which means it is time for the Supreme Court to take a new turn, because the day that we've been waiting for since she won in a landslide at the beginning of April, Judge Janet Protasiewicz becomes Justice Janet Protasiewicz today. And for the first time in 15 years, there will be a liberal majority on Wisconsin Supreme Court. And Dan, how are you feeling about that?
I think there are some people who might argue that it's the first time ever that there will be a liberal-leaning majority on the Wisconsin Supreme Court.
Explain that argument.
Well, so I talked to Jeff Mandel from Law Forward on a radio spot that I did a couple weeks ago. And he talked about, you know, it's really only been a partisan lean on the court since 2008, since Michael Gabelman was elected in 2008 to serve on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And that, you know, before that, there wasn't really the same type of partisan makeup.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, you know, we've heard so much talk about this flipping to a liberal majority on the court. You know, I think we heard a lot of people say, you know, oh, there's the politicization of the court in this race and blah, blah, blah. Well, it couldn't flip to a liberal majority if it wasn't first a conservative majority. Yeah. So I think that is, you know, that is a really interesting component of this. It's a new era in Wisconsin. It really, I think we talked so much about this being a sea change moment for the state of Wisconsin with that April election that you and I covered so closely and produced so much content about. You know, so much of what I talked about in the aftermath of that was that this is the ground moved in Wisconsin, and this is a seismic moment for politics in the state of Wisconsin. And I think we're going to see that, but I think we're going to see that slowly at first, because I think the court, being the nature of what a court is, it's reactive to whatever else is happening. So it's not like the court can necessarily hand things down. We're seeing some things about some personnel changes in the news today. You know, that seems to just kind of come with the territory when you have change at the top. But I think, you know, in terms of responding to cases, any immediate changes, things like that, that will come kind of as the slow, annoying legal process unfolds.
Because out of the myriad of issues that have been thrown out, that, you know, cases that could come ahead of this Wisconsin Supreme Court. Correct me if I'm wrong. The two big ones that are at least already in motion are the Elias group that just filed last week to reopen cases on drop boxes and like early voting cases that were from 2022, and the abortion, challenging the 1849 abortion ban, then that's been in motion for a little while. But everything else is like, it's going to be net new cases that haven't even been filed yet. If we're talking about redistricting, if we're talking about Act 10, if we're talking about, what are some of the other things that people have thrown out that could be potential, you know?
I think a lot of voting rights stuff. And redistricting stuff will be, you know, high on the list, just given the timing of having to, you know, potentially implement any of those changes. And, you know, the redistricting one is obviously one that I've written about and covered quite a bit. I imagine that, you know, after talking to Jeff from Law Forward, you know, there was a lot of information that he shared about, you know, the timing and the potential for new maps by 2024. And I think just the focus on voting rights, because the last court was so restrictive towards voting rights and you know, upholding challenges to voter ID and gerrymandering and drop boxes and all these different things. So I imagine that will be, you know, a priority coming into this. And I think the gerrymandering one that has warped politics in the state so significantly that, you know, basically the last Supreme Court decision that came down after the last round of redistricting cases said that, hey, this is going to be a job for the state courts. And so I think the people who will be filing those will just be like, okay, we are ready. Mm-hmm. We are ready to send these challenges to the state courts. And so I think, you know, when I talked to Jeff Mandel, he said there is a chance that there will be new maps in the state legislature for the 2024 election.
But also if that there is a chance for that, but also I feel like there needs to be a reality check on that doesn't necessarily mean Democrats are going to have the majority. And no. I think that sometimes when I read my comment section or kind of where maybe the general public lies on, there's been such a aggressive campaign over the last 10 plus years, I think, on the what Fair Maps has done and like how much mm-hmm. gerrymandering is in the average, like the average person knows what that is now, right? Because nationally and in Wisconsin, we've talked about it so much. And I'm a little concerned that there's going to be some people out there who just think that a Democratic majority has been held back because of gerrymandering, instead of remembering that, like, no, this is still a 50-50 state. It's just they yes. don't have a supermajority. Like, Republicans do not hold a supermajority in reality of voters and how they vote. But it does not mean that we are like a clear and true Democratic, like with a capital D majority either. And so at least a lot of the stuff I've read is that even with new maps, the likelihood that Democrats have the majority is in the minority.
Yeah, I think Republicans would still be the favorites to win in the state legislature, but they wouldn't be getting 2/3 of the yes. seats anymore. So I think, you know, there's a little bit of a natural gerrymander, as they would say, mm-hmm. In Wisconsin, where, you know, some of the margins that you see in Madison or Milwaukee or some very left-leaning districts are a little bit higher than you might see in the most right-leaning districts, right? So I think you have a little bit of that natural gerrymander, but that's about 2%. So, like, if you had, like, a fair map that reflected the voters, you would probably have, you know, a slight Republican majority with some swing states. But then again, you could have elections like 2012 or 2018 that had like a real, you know, kind of blue wave type of year where you could conceivably yeah. have a Democratic majority.
Yeah.
But I just think, you know, on balance, you're probably going to see Republicans in the favorite in the state legislature, particularly the Senate.
Well, and regardless of whether or not Democrats get a lock, I just want to see our elected officials having to respond to the wants of their constituents because they're feeling some pressure and gosh, I might lose. I think that would be good.
I think it would also be good.
Yes.
All right.
Competition's a good thing.
Competition
right?
is a good thing. Anything you want to plug? Anything coming up that you want to tell the people about with a minute left?
You know, I think we've talked a lot about what's ahead here, talked about 2024. I think now is a great time to subscribe to the Recombobulation Area because we're going to be covering a whole lot of the state legislature and 2024 and all of these things.
There you go. You going to the state fair this weekend?
Not this weekend, but I am going to go.
All right.
I'm going to eat my way through the
state
fair.
I was going to say, is there a food that you're looking forward to? We've been playing a game, giving away tickets, is asking people what they would basically... crush,
I love the corn.
Eat forever.
The roasted corn at the state fair is a must.
Okay.
And I love a funnel cake.
There you go. Classics. All right, Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area. We will see you next Tuesday. Have a great day.
Thanks for having me.
All right, we're going to take a break for the top of the hour news. This is As Goes Wisconsin.